Welcome to Freelance Gems, a podcast designed to help you make your service-based business a whole lot less work and a whole lot more fun. Hey guys, I hope you're doing well. Today is actually my 22nd birthday, so this whole podcast is going to be about my birthday, so I hope you all enjoy it. No, just kidding. Today's podcast will be a kind of reminiscing one about the lessons I've learned in my first year of business. Because even though my official business anniversary was in May, it's only a month later, and since it's my birthday, it's just making me think about growth and learning and kind of what I've accomplished in this year and what I've figured out. Owning a business and freelancing and trying to navigate how to make your own living has really been one of the biggest learning experiences in my life. So I thought I would gather up what I've learned and put it in this podcast for you in case any of the lessons I've learned could help you learn a few yourself. I actually hesitated recording this a bit because I feel like as someone who's only a year into business, I don't have a lot to be teaching to other people. But I thought about it, and I remember when I was brand new, and I had so many questions. And so no matter where you are in your journey, whether you're 1 year in, or 3 months in, or 10 years in, there's always someone that is earlier on in their journey that you can help out. And that's why I'm making this. It's for the people that are brand new, or even just a little bit behind me, or at the same pace in their business with me, or even ahead of me. Because we can learn stuff from each other at any stage of business. So without any further ado, let's get into the episode. Here are 22 lessons I've learned in my first year of business. And they range from super practical tips about like sticky notes and organization to bigger, more philosophical lessons that I've had to learn. Number one is stress isn't worth any amount of money. Prioritize clients and projects that feel aligned instead. I learned this one when I took on way too many projects 1 month, and I had my highest income month, which was amazing, but I honestly felt none of the benefits because I was so overwhelmed. I was so stressed that I was physically ill. I was not eating. I was having an awful, awful time, and that was my highest income month. Just make sure you take a moment before you accept that project or work with that client to think about how much stress this is going to cause you and if it's worth the amount of money you're going to get paid. Because I honestly would rather have a 1K project that's super smooth and mellow than a 10K project that is super involved and stressful. Maybe that's just me, maybe you have a higher stress tolerance, but I've learned that stress for me is not worth any amount of money. Number two is niching matters, but if you start as a generalist first, your niche will come to you naturally. Now, niching is something that has caused me so much stress because if you've been in the business world at all, you've probably heard the advice to niche a million freaking times. And then you've also got some people saying, no, you don't need to niche, and you got all this back and forth, and it's just hella confusing. So I'm here to tell you that it is okay to start as a generalist. If you want to go on Upwork and do copywriting and social media and design and anything you can get your hands on, I say go for it because it's going to let you know first what kind of service you want to niche into. And secondly, this one will probably come later on, you'll figure out what kind of people you want to work with as well. So niching really is a two-part thing. You want to be really confident in the service you offer as well as the people that you're offering it to. Because it will make your content marketing so much easier if you know who the heck you're talking to. And I'm here to tell you that small business owners or entrepreneurs is not a niche. I know, it's upsetting, but it's not a niche because that is such a huge spectrum of people. Just do some networking, think about the type of clients you like working with, and remember that there are people out there that are truly a joy to work with. And you'll find them. Just give yourself some time to be a generalist first. Number three, almost everything that goes wrong in your business is probably your fault. But that's the best part, because you have the power to change it. It sucks when you realize that your client is probably expecting things from you at midnight because you've been answering at midnight. Or your client is expecting you to do all this crazy amount of work for $500 because you took on that project for $500. And that's okay, because each project is a chance to put the lessons that you learned in the last one into practice. So just be patient with yourself, but realize that it's probably not your client's fault. But the good part is you are in control of things like your hours and your response times and even the amount of income you make. So just treat each project as a learning lesson, because that's what it is. And don't get down on yourself if you took one that was too low this time or you responded to an email too late this time, because you can always start fresh, whether it's with a new client or even just reasserting boundaries with an old client. Number 4, audit your time and see how much time you're spending on money-making tasks, because it's probably not a lot of time and you can cut down a lot of the things you're doing in your business. You don't have to do this for long because it is kind of tedious, but if you can get a time tracking app or just use Excel or even just write down every hour what you've been doing, this will show you so much about where your time is going and let you trim stuff down. So if you eventually want to have a 4-day work week or just start working shorter days, all of a sudden you realize you actually can do this super easily if you're focusing on needle moving tasks only. And you should be focusing on these tasks the most anyway. It's really easy to get distracted with dinking around on your website or Instagram for too long, but if there are tasks that you know make you money, whether it's cold emailing or Upwork or going to networking events, prioritize those and then just sprinkle in the other things you have to do or even outsource them, and you will have so much time you can get back. Number 5, switch up your work environment. So if you can work from a new spot, maybe even in your house or ideally at a coffee shop or a park, even just once a week, this is a game changer. I know some people do this all the time, so it might not be that crazy for them, but I was in Portland for the last year and a half and everything was very shut down, and I have a dog with separation anxiety, so I can't really go many places anyway. But I really wish that I spent more time in different locations, because the weeks that I did go to a coffee shop, I got so much done so much faster. I felt more energized and I just felt like I did something new and fun that day. So it's a really nice way to kind of treat yourself, get a little pastry, get a little coffee, and just enjoy that variety, because that's one of the best parts of working from yourself, is you don't have to be stuck in the same place every day. Number 6, community is key. Find or make a mastermind group so you can support each other. All you need to do for this is gather like 2 or 3 or 5, whatever, some small amount of people. Maybe there are people you've already been talking to on Instagram and you propose that you start having a Zoom call every week or every other week. This is what makes business fun. Because believe it or not, even though we love being in control of everything and working for ourselves, we also love collaboration still and connection, people to complain to, people to get advice from, people that are just in the same boat as you. Because when you're going this path of entrepreneurship, you might find that your friends and family support you, but they kind of have no idea what you're doing and they might never fully know. And that's okay, because this is a totally new frontier, especially people of older generations. It just might not click for them and they can still support you. Doesn't mean it's not worth trying to explain what you do or maybe even showing them, but at the end of the day, it's really, really special to have peers that are in the trenches with you, doing their own thing. They don't have to be in the same industry even. I'm friends with a lot of social media managers, and that is one of my favorite groups that I meet up with, because we're still dealing with a lot of the same problems. So the sooner you can find a group or make a group, please join one, because they are so fun. Number 7. Try different types of marketing and see what you like best, because that's what you'll be able to stick to. I have tried YouTube multiple times because I like video, but my freaking computer is a MacBook Air and this girl cannot handle editing a video. Like, it takes 4 hours for it to just be able to calm down. The fan's going crazy, things are lagging, and I'm not even filming on a camera. I'm filming on an iPhone. So when that was happening, I decided, you know what? video right now is not fun. And I also tried blogging, and I hate writing. So, hence what you're listening to right now, I started doing podcasts, and I love it. And I think because of that, it's been the only long-form content I've been able to stick through. Knock on wood. But I am on my 6th episode now, which is a big deal for me. Because, girl, I have tried YouTube, and I only get like 2 or 3 videos in every time because of the damn computer thing. And same with blogging, because I just don't like writing. And with podcasts, I can actually turn all of these into blogs, which I've been doing. But it's way easier for me to start out just talking and then repurpose from there. And then you have your other content that you can do short form stuff from. But if it's all centered around one, but if all your content is centered around one form of long form content marketing that you actually like, it's going to make everything so much easier. So just try out different methods and see what you like and then stick with it. Number 8, welcome failure with open arms. It's often exactly what you need to point you in a new direction or give you some clarity whenever it happens. I tried to start a paid community early this year in January, and I was really, really excited about it, but it didn't work. It failed. I got a few people in there, but there weren't enough. It was like inviting people to a party, but it's like there's just your mom there and it's really embarrassing. And I tried to keep it going for another month, but people started dropping out. And I decided, you know what? I think this is not going to work out right now. So I pulled the plug on it, and instead I was able to focus all my energy over here on this account for Opal and just go all in on Opal templates, because what I was doing was dividing my time between Opal and this club, which I loved, but it was just splitting my energy in two. It was hard still. I cried. I was embarrassed. It's really embarrassing trying to start a community and having it fail because you have like all these people sitting in this empty room watching you mess up. So but doesn't mean I might not start another community in the future. I've actually been toying with the idea of starting a free one just to keep it super low pressure and not have people, you know, feel like they have to leave if they're not getting their money's worth or whatever, because I do love networking like that and I love having little meetups, but that failure might have happened to show me to focus on Opal templates or to have me open up a group later on with the lessons that I've learned from that one. So please try and embrace failure and look for the good things that come from it, because there is almost always a silver lining. Number 9, a month of consistent outreach is all you need to get booked out. I swear to God, please just do this. Give yourself a challenge, whether it's 10 Upwork proposals every week or 20 cold emails every week or one networking event. Just stick to something and try it out for a month, and you will be amazed at the success that comes from it. I did this in March, I believe, and I was doing so much outreach. I was doing, I think, at least 50 proposals on Upwork for the whole month, and I was having like 5 discovery calls a week. And the result was that I had the highest income month of my life in April. Now, did I actually hate this month and proceed to make way less money the months after because I got so burnt out? Yes. So, caveat here, be careful about overbooking yourself. But if you can spread this out nicely and keep that momentum going, that is truly all you need to get booked out. I swear to God, just try it. Number 10, discovery calls don't need to be longer than 15 minutes. This is a simple one, but I have lots of friends who are doing 30-minute discovery calls that are turning into 45-minute ones, and they're basically free consultations. A discovery call is not a consultation. It is just a little chat to see if you like each other, to verify that you're both real humans, and to answer any last questions that your service guide or your services page didn't answer, which is a whole other lesson. I recommend listening to my episode on boosting up your services page if you haven't yet, because that will save you a ton of questions on your discovery calls. Just remember, they don't have to be 30 minutes long, and it'll save you a lot of time in the process. Number 12. Have something for everybody in your service options. I recommend doing a low ticket offer for the very lowest rank, and then having a product sized mid-range offer, and then a custom high ticket offer. This is just what I do. You don't have to do this exact thing, but I find custom work super involved and a bit stressful, so I like to have that as my absolute highest ticket item. And then that helps frame your mid and low range items as way more affordable for people as well. Plus, you're just giving people different access points to work with you. Maybe someone will start out with your DIY option or your power call option, and then they'll end up going to your mid-range investment and maybe even your custom one day. But this lets you do two things. One, by letting different clients work with you in different income brackets, and two, letting you try out different levels of your service. So you might find that you hate full service versions of whatever you do, whether that's full service social media management or copywriting, whatever you do. If you don't like the highest ticket item or the most custom one, you don't have to do that. You can do whatever you want because it is your business. Number 13, you don't have to wait to reach certain income goals. Number 13, you can give yourself Number 13, you can accomplish other goals in your business before reaching your income goals. So what I mean by this is you don't have to be making 100K a year to give yourself something like a 4-day work week. I actually like doing this early on because A, it's easy when you're just starting out and you don't have a team yet to downsize your work week or your work day, and B, because you're giving yourself a little treat, a little reward, you could say, in your business that you have total control over, and you don't have to wait for, you know, a certain number of clients or a certain price off your packages. And that's all important stuff too. You should be actively pursuing high ticket clients and everything you need to do to reach your income goals. But in the meantime, if you're not quite there yet, you can still make your business what you want it to be on the lifestyle side of things. So if that's working a split day or working on Saturday so you can take Monday off, just do whatever you want in your business so you can make it fit your lifestyle first, and then you can still focus on your income goals, but you'll have a business that treats you nicer in the meantime. Number 14, focus on one thing to make progress. I swear to God, it is so easy to want to do 30 things at once when you're running your own business, but please try and focus on one thing at a time and you will see so much more progress. There's many ways to do this. You can focus on one thing a week or one thing a month. I used to just put literally one sticky note in front of my desk that said November's priority and one thing on there. Maybe it was launch new website or book 3 clients. And it was one thing staring at you every day so that you know this is all I need to focus on this month. Since then, I've kind of switched it up and I'm doing a more involved plan these days. So if you want to hear more about that, you can listen to episode 5 about my planning system, because this all revolves around priorities as well. But the main takeaway here is just stay focused. Don't try and take on too much because your energy will be spread out in too many different directions and you can make a lot more progress when it's going in one direction. Also, I love One Direction, so that's a great plug right there. If you are a fellow directioner, let me know. I'd love to connect. We can talk about who your favorite boy was. Mine was Liam Payne, but I've also been leaning Harry lately, so I just think he's done the best musically post-direction. Anyway, number 15, get a desk and chair. Oh my God, this might not be that shocking to some people. You might be thinking, what? This girl didn't have a desk and a chair? Yep, I did not. I worked on a bookshelf and a yoga stool for the first 6 months of working from home. My knees were like stuffed into the little cubbies and I had like a foot of space behind my bed. This is also going on in a 300 square foot studio. So, you know, you got to make do sometimes. But let me tell you, when I turned that bookshelf into a desk, I just took out some of the shelves. So we're still staying thrifty with it. You don't got to get a $200 desk or anything like that. And I got a little 25 buck chair off Facebook Marketplace. I wanted to work so much more. Like, I was excited to sit down. I had everything going on. I had also got a little mouse and a keyboard and a laptop stand, which I highly recommend if you're using a laptop so you don't have to be all scrunched over. But if you can make your desk area, your work area nice, you're probably going to get a lot more work done because nobody wants to sit in a bookshelf or on the bed or wherever else you're doing it right now. And it's also not conducive to work-life balance as well. If you're working on your bed or in your kitchen all day, it's kind of hard to make the distinction between work and play. Okay, number 16, give yourself a start and stop time, or else you're going to work way too much or way not enough. I've been on both ends of this. I've had nights where I've worked until 10 p.m., and I've had days where I just kind of barely even started. And it was because I didn't have a start and a stop time. So it's not like this is concrete forever, like you have to choose 6 a.m. and do it for the rest of your life. I kind of changed mine with the seasons. During the summer, I work earlier. I'm still transitioning to this because it's not summer just yet. I mean, now it is, now this podcast is going out, but it's okay. We're just getting started. So I'm having a slow start, but my ideal summer schedule is working like 8 to 1 or 8 to 2. Like that is the dream for me because I love summer. I live in the Pacific Northwest, so we don't get a lot of sun, a lot of warm sun, or days that aren't raining. So we take advantage of it. And girl, I am not going to be inside all day working on stuff while I get these 3 months, just 3 months of good weather. So if you have a season like that where you just love being outside, or maybe you're just in a season of life where you need to be prioritizing family or your health, whatever's going on, you can adjust your start and stop time to work for you. Number 17, invest in increments. So what this means is start with the least amount of tools, subscriptions, and courses, or at least the least expensive ones you can. But when you get to the next level of your business or you're ready to level up, investments in high quality courses and tools that are the right fit for you are probably just the thing you need to get to that next level. I've had the best time with courses. I spend a lot of time hanging out with the person's content first and the general community before I decide to invest, which I highly recommend because there are a lot of fishy courses out there. But there's also a lot of amazing, amazing teachers and communities out there that you can join, and they can be game changing for your business. But so unless you come into your business with a ton of savings or, you know, knowing exactly what you're doing, because most of us don't at the beginning, I say start slow and build up. The first course I ever purchased was like $200 and it felt huge. It felt really scary. I was embarrassed to tell anyone. I was like, I bought a course from a random person on the internet. But that course opened the doors of freelancing for me. It was fantastic. And eventually ended up taking a $1,000 course, which was even more game-changing for me. And so on. I've been able to keep kind of inching up my investments as they inch up the return that they give me. So I highly recommend courses and communities and the right tools because they can make your business so much easier. You don't have to just be drudging through the trenches forever and trying to figure out everything on your own. But, you know, just be mindful of where you're at in business and how much return you're going to get for how much you're giving. Number 18, check your email once a day. Everyone will survive. I swear by this because it's helped me so much. But when you check your email once a day, you give everyone permission to take a slower pace. Because that's what email used to be. Email used to be like, it could be a week or like 2 or 3 days. And some people even set that up where they say, you can expect a response from me within 2 to 3 days. That's fine too. Whatever kind of pace feels right for you. I don't know your circumstance. Maybe, you know, you have to be on email more than that. But at the very least, if you can break it into focused little sprints when you're on there, that's ideal. Because if you're trying to work on something and you're getting pings and you're checking your inbox, your mind is getting so scattered. So for me, once a day in the morning works great because I don't like thinking about what's in there all day. Some people do it once a day at the end of the day. You could do it once in the beginning and once at the end. Maybe once in the beginning, once before lunch, one at the end of the day. The options are endless, but just find a pace that works for you. Number 19, create a welcome page for new and old clients. This can be a PDF or a page on your website. It's something I've been putting in the new templates for Opal's shop because I think this is such a game changer. If you can have one place for your clients to look at your office hours, your communication boundaries, your project guidelines, your feedback guidelines, the list goes on. I could probably make a whole podcast episode just on welcome pages. But if you implement this in your business, it's going to save you a lot of hassle because you're telling your client what to expect from you and how to work with you. And 9 out of 10 times, clients want to be respectful to your boundaries and work nicely with you. They just don't know what your preferred working hours are or how long you take to respond to emails. So you can lay that all out in a welcome page. Number 20, put your office hours in your email signature. This one branches off of the last one, but people aren't going to always be looking at your welcome page. So if you have a boundary that you really want to make sure people are remembering, for me, it's my office hours, but you could also add in your typical email response time. Just pop it in your email signature. You can put it in little tiny text, italics, whatever you want. But if it's there as a visual reminder every time you send an email, that is going to stay top of your client's mind instead of just in a PDF that they looked at one time. Number 21, treat social media like a big conference. Make friends and you'll have fun posting even when you have like 100 followers. I got this idea from Puno from I Love Creatives. She is the master of Instagram marketing. She's grown multiple businesses on there. But her main takeaway was she was just talking to everybody in the early years of freelancing, growing her business. She was being genuine and commenting on stuff and in people's DMs and setting up times to meet with them and just treating Instagram like a giant conference. And I think that's so cool because that is really the point of social media, is to be social. And what you'll find is that this makes Instagram or wherever your main social presence is so much more fun because all of a sudden you don't need 10,000 followers to have an engaged quote-unquote community. Instead, you can literally have, 5, 10, 50, doesn't matter how many followers you have if you're making genuine connections with those people. I'd way rather have 200 people that love me and love connecting with me than 1,000 who could give a crap about me. Number 22, I saved the best for the last. Not really, these are all kind of equally important lessons, but this one is to exist outside of your business. When you're in the early years of business, and even not, even just forever, it's going to be an uphill battle a lot of the time. It's super humbling, it can be super defeating and overwhelming, trying to learn all these new things and juggle everything, and it can be very easy to attach all your self-worth to your success in your business. But if you exist outside of your business, whether you just love hiking or you pick up knitting or you have a really close community of friends that you have dinner parties with, you can retain your identity as a whole person and not just a business owner because we are whole people. So let yourself embrace some of the other fun things in life. So if something's not going super great in your business, it's not as soul crushing as it would be otherwise. All right. That's it. Those are 22 lessons I've learned in 1 year of business that I'm sharing with you in hopes that it resonates with you or it makes you think of a new thing you could try in your business or even just a new way to look at something. It's really a never-ending journey. We all know that. And it's, it's a very special opportunity to be able to share what we learn with each other. I mean, I've saved myself from making so many mistakes just from hearing other people's. So if we can all talk about when we mess up or when we learn something or pick something new up and we can share it with each other, we are just gonna make everybody's businesses a little bit easier. And that's really the goal. So I hope this helped and I will talk to you next Wednesday.